the most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul? Most interactive show, and I really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
The Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Yesterday, your beloved University of Houston Cougars did this against Memphis.
Shedd driving, looking up, 1 second to go for the win! He got it! The Cougars win it! Number one remains number one!
Listen, we gotta play both the calls of our beloved Cougs, whether it's the legend himself, Jim Nantz, or Jeremy Branham on the call, you know, and of course, as one of the most important people in the Coug pack, I of course have to weigh in on it. And I liked what they did yesterday. Obviously, it was a very fun game. That was a tough place to play. Really, I thought fantastic crowd for a college basketball game. That's about as good as it gets. 18,000 people. They were loud. I thought the environment was great. Shout out to the Memphis band playing Welcome to the Jungle. Didn't know that was possible. Because honestly, whenever you go to a sporting event and you hear Welcome to the Jungle, even at like a college game, it's probably going to be played over the Jumbotron, over the speakers, and it's going to be the Guns N' Roses version of it. To do it band style, I guess, it's impressive. I thought that the Memphis band bleeping delivered. And Memphis has given the Cougs problems for years. And in the last time that these two are going to be playing one another twice in a season, it's pretty cool that the Cougs finally were able to sweep them. We'll see if they play one another again in the conference tournament. I doubt it'll be an easy out, because the last time the Cougs played Memphis, Memphis was without its best player. The Cougs had a 12-point lead in this game, but at one point in the second half, they were down, I think, 5. And it looked like it was getting away from them. And the concerns that I have for the Cougs come tournament time, because we do have a very lofty standard for them, are still there. Like, they haven't gotten rid of them yet. I know they're going to give you effort and energy all game long. And that's honestly all I ask for as a basketball fan. But dumb turnovers and bad spots, moments where the offense like doesn't know what it's doing, and looks like the Rockets do at times. That's more a shot at the Rockets than it is at the Cougars, by the way, because you expect that from time to time in college basketball. They go cold from outside a lot, and they go cold from the free throw line a lot. You had both of those problems yesterday. And you think about all of the issues that they have, the bad habits that they have as a team, even though they are deep, and you feel pretty good about their tournament chances. It does make me have a hard time seeing them winning all 6 games. Like, I feel like those issues are going to bite them in the keister at least at one point during the tournament, because Memphis is a good team. Memphis matches up well with the Cougars. There are better teams than Memphis, though, right? Memphis beat the Aggies twice this year. They're a good team. They're a tournament team, right? I imagine we'll find that out in a couple of weeks, because I think they're, what, 23-8 now after yesterday? I don't know how the bracketology stuff works. Beating Texas A&M a couple of times definitely helps them out. But when the Cougs play a better team, are they going to be able to get away with the bad habits that they do? I would say more often than not, no. It's not to say they're bad. Yesterday was a lot of fun, but I think that all of the things that could potentially spell the end of the Cougars season in the tournament, you saw every single one of them in that game. Credit to them for winning, for overcoming it, but these are things that you got to keep in mind. As far as the NFL Combine, I went on a rant about it in the 10:30 segment. I'm going to be a little bit more calm about it here. I just don't think that what these guys do in shorts should change your mind as much as it seemingly has about specific players over the weekend. Like, Bryce Young measuring at 5'10 and 1/8, but also weighing in at 204 pounds, should not be something to panic over. It shouldn't. Kyler Murray was the same height. Murray's big issue has not been his ability to play in the league, though I think he's a lot more quick and athletic than Bryce Young, who didn't do any of the athletic stuff. The only guy who did was Richardson, who was an absolute stud when he did it. Young, I thought, interestingly, weighed the same weight as Russell Wilson at the combine. So he's capable of gaining weight. Was that weight all just drinking a ton of water and eating as much as possible over the last couple of weeks? Maybe. But if Russell Wilson, who is a stockier player, whose weight is much as 225 pounds, I think weighs 215 pounds now. If Russell Wilson can build up that frame, the frame for Bryce Young is something that you're most concerned about. The height is something that you think could be an issue, but it wasn't an issue for him in college. I get reservations about Young, but I don't think this weekend should have changed your mind drastically about him. We all had a pretty good idea that going into this weekend, he's not that tall. And the same thing with Anthony Richardson. Look, he blew everybody away. He did. He was awesome. He ran a 4.44, a 4.43, had an incredible vertical jump, though what does that matter for a quarterback? Had an incredible broad jump, though I guess that matters a little bit more for a quarterback if we're talking about quarterback sneaks and jumping over the line or something like that. Like, there's a lot of really impressive things that Richardson did, and he had a really nice 60-yard throw. But some of the same issues that he had in college were still there. Like, he missed some intermediate throws. He is a project. He might be awesome someday, but he's going to need a lot of help. The good thing that he has in his pocket, his back pocket, is that he at the very least can move around, which I will tell any person who is still a Davis Mills truther. Davis Mills has nothing in his pocket that isn't related to throwing a football, which he is not very good at. Is he NFL good? Sure, yeah. I'm not saying he's like awful. He made it to the NFL, but he's very inconsistent with his throwing. So is Anthony Richardson. That could get better over time. We saw it get better with Josh Allen, but it might not. And I think that we have to stop telling ourselves that a guy who was a 54% passer in college, where it is very easy to find open wide receivers, are you telling me that that guy is definitely going to get better and saying, well, Josh Allen did, well, Jalen Hurts did? They are not the norm. Improving as a quarterback is not a guarantee. It can happen. It doesn't always happen. And Richardson was great. I'm not going to rule out the idea of taking Richardson, though it doesn't sound like the Texans are going to take Richardson based off of what I'm hearing. But what he did was impressive. And what he did was impressive. Like, I'm also not telling you, like, that wasn't cool. If you're into the NFL combine, that was. But don't change your mind on who the best quarterback in this year's draft is based off of this. Young was the best quarterback in college football last year. My biggest reservations are his size. They remain his size. But I'm not going to tell you the guy's going to suck. And I'm not going to tell you that Richardson's going to suck either. I'm just not going to say all of a sudden he's the best quarterback out there. And I'm not going to start banging on the table for the Texans to draft Richardson because of what he did in shorts. But people are doing it. Enough people are, and it's annoying. This weekend has been turned into something as far as importance that it truly isn't the NFL Combine. It has become an event for the league and for those who are obsessed with draft conversation, which, to be perfectly honest, I'm not. I find it boring. Those people, okay, maybe you're into it online. I'm not. And I'm just saying, as someone who has been covering the league for a decade plus, I have learned that we do not know anything coming out of the NFL Combine. We don't. You can get excited about certain players, and certain players are going to get drafted a little bit earlier. That's really all you got. So keep it in your pants when it comes to great combine performances. Okay? Thank you. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I watched a fight this weekend. Is John Jones him, as the cool kids say? Also, how long does it take to shake off getting punched or kicked in the nats, like generally? Let's talk amongst men, huh? Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston. You can jump on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. You can also text us or tweet us, the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. I really think we overstate the importance of the NFL Combine. Kevin Romus on the Twitch chat commented, if you can suck in college, Richardson, and the Combine turns you into the number one pick, why even bother playing college football? First, as far as the odds of Anthony Richardson, he is now second to be drafted per odds. Young is the favorite at minus 240. Richardson now second at plus 380. And the Bears are saying that they are going to trade the pick. But to push back on a bit of that comment, Richardson didn't suck in college. Richardson was inconsistent. Richardson's wow moments were like, whoa. And that's how you catch the eye of a scout. And then, of course, you add all of the physical traits that he just showed off this weekend. It's unfair to say he sucked. I think it's fair, though, to question whether or not he's ever going to be consistent as a passer. But if you design an offense around his strengths, he could certainly be successful in the NFL. Daniel Jones is a quarterback that I think we look at and we think he's not that athletic. I think a lot of us were pretty surprised by how athletic he was in his first year out of Duke. Remember that run that he had and he like just completely ate it at the 15-yard line? It was in Monday Night Football, I think, Sean?
Yeah, it was simultaneously the most athletic and unathletic a man can look by just pulling away from an NFL defense. I think he was clocked at like the fastest run anyone had that year, including like Lamar Jackson, everyone you think is fast.
Right. And look, when you have strengths like that and they're sort of forgotten by NFL teams, which it seems like the Giants did, it is the responsibility of the coach to find a way to use it. So give a lot of credit to Brian Daboll, who was like, wait a second, let's have Daniel Jones run a lot this year. And even though Daniel Jones is a pretty good passer, let's have Daniel Jones take less risks. And guess what? There were less fumbles. There were less interceptions. Like, Daboll did a hell of a job with Daniel Jones this past season. If you have a guy like Anthony Richardson or a guy like Justin Fields or a guy like Lamar Jackson, you have a lot to work with as an offensive mind, even if the guy isn't a great passer. But you still have to be a good thrower of the football. And that's the big thing with Richardson. This weekend does not change that. It doesn't. You knew Richardson was a super athlete going into this weekend. You know it more so coming out of this weekend. But does that change how he is going to be in the NFL? Does that make him better than C.J. Stroud? Hell, does that make him better than Will Levis? I don't think you can conclusively say yes to any of those. I definitely thought he did a hell of a job. And yeah, he deserves to get his flowers, but not to the point where you're saying he's definitively the best quarterback in the draft, or you're changing your opinion on who the Texans should draft right now entirely based off of the weekend. Because most people who are doing that are prisoners of the moment. And we all tend to do that. But acknowledge that you are a prisoner of the moment right now and that you are not looking at this realistically. That's it. It's, you know, you can be excited about it and you can hope that the Texans draft him, but it should not have been based off of this weekend. You should feel the exact same way that you felt going into this weekend about Anthony Richardson that you do now.
I think that's where I'm at. Where like I just like to allow myself to get excited. I know it's the combine and stupid, but it is just fun to have this guy in the league who, you know, when he comes in, like, you know, this guy's like the most athletic quarterback basically ever.
Yes.
That is fun. That it's just fun that this guy is going to be in the league. And yeah, it doesn't mean he's going to be a good quarterback. It doesn't mean he's going to be he's even going to play his rookie year. Doesn't mean he's going to get drafted over the other two, you know, the two top quarterbacks in this class. But it's just fun to be like, wow, what are like,
yeah,
wow, that guy did some crazy stuff this weekend.
Legitimately, wow. Whoever has him, if he plays as a rookie, it's going to be an absolute roller coaster. But I would imagine it will be a lot more fun than we had this past year with boring ass Davis Mills, who was boring in every single element. No offense to him, he was boring. Boring at the microphone, boring watching him play. Everything, boring. Richardson would have at the very least been fun, though I probably would have been pulling my hair out a lot, much like I was on most Saturdays watching the Florida Gators play. Because I like the Florida Gators, and I'm biased when it comes to the Gators from time to time. I am not biased here. I had more fun watching Richardson this year in a really awful Gator season than I have had watching most Gator quarterbacks post Tim Tebow. Chris Leak is my favorite Gator quarterback of all time, by the way. Not Tim Tebow, but whatever. That's neither here nor there.
That feels like a very Gators hipster take.
But I mean, the thing with Leak is, Leak, you were like, whoa, like, why doesn't everyone give him flowers? Like, Tebow was like, everyone knew how good he was. So, you're right, it is a bit of a hipster take.
It's a little bit like going like, oh yeah, my favorite album isn't the one that went quadruple platinum. It's actually their first album.
Yeah, that's fair. Part of the Chris Leak thing is the first Gator game I ever went to, Chris Leak was the quarterback, and he was doing it as a freshman, and he deserved that national championship because, unlike most of the players on the Florida Gators, like, he seemed like he wasn't the worst.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's kind of a bummer just finding out, like, year after year, like, oh, that Gator was a bad person. Oh, that guy murdered people. Oh, like, oh, Urban Meyer, stand-up citizen, huh? UFC had an event on Saturday. I'll be honest, I had no idea about it until I got to Drift Bar. And I'm like, why is it so crowded here? And then all of a sudden, right after I got there, I had been out day drinking, took a four-hour nap, came back out, because I'm a champion. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, damn, John Jones is back? He's back! That's great! That was really my takeaway. Again, I'm the most casual fighting fan there is, and I'll admit it. And some diehard boxing fans, or fighting fans, you hate it when somebody weighs in on it who doesn't know anything about it. I'm just going to admit, I know pretty much nothing about it. But I do know John Jones, who, technically, I consider him like a Syracuse grad. His brothers played at Syracuse. They both played football there. Chandler Jones and Arthur Jones. What? Why are you laughing? He's from Rochester. We can claim him. Syracuse University alum, John Jones, who didn't go there, but could have, probably.
What's it? Newhouse?
Newhouse School of Communications.
Yes.
Yeah. Newhouse School of Cocaine. I mean, communications. Yeah. Well, allegedly.
John Jones. That's
listen, for all the cocaine users out there, this was a great weekend, right? I mean, this is just the perseverance of the human spirit. Look, he's awesome. So, I'm watching the fight. It starts, and I'm like, wait a second, why did it just stop? And they show the replay, and he got kicked in the nats. Like, the guy he was fighting, Cyril Gane, who I've seen before, like, I actually recognized him. I was like, oh, it's the French guy with the chest tattoo.
Cyril Gane.
Okay, see, exactly.
It's the French pronunciation, Paul. I don't know if you...
Gane would be that. But anyway, he kicks him, hits him right in the nats. And look, we all know that if you get kicked in the balls or punched in the balls, it hurts. And the buddies, the boys, the hangers, the clackers, whatever you want to call them, it hurts. I actually looked this up. Like, why is it like this? Well, guess what? There are densely packed nerve endings in a small area around the testicles, which are, you know, an important organ. They're external, so they're vulnerable to injury. And what's interesting is that you might feel pain elsewhere, specifically in the abdomen, after you get kicked there. So Jones gets kicked. They stop the fight for a second. And things escalated so quickly. One of my friends was having, like, issues. So I went to the bar, like, rushed over to the bar to get him water at a very densely packed Drift. And all of a sudden, I hear everyone go, oh! Because this was right after he got kicked in the nads. I figured they were going to let it, like, they were going to pause things for a moment so that his balls would be better. Because, I mean, you get kicked in the balls. How long does it typically take you to feel a little bit better? Like, 5 minutes? That pain lingers. So I'm walking, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, he won already? This is a guy who's 35 years old. This was, I think, his first fight in, what, 3+ years?
His first fight at heavyweight.
Yes, and the last time he fought, he was 205 pounds. He's 250 pounds. He was fighting at heavyweight, and I mean, he won in 5 seconds. Look, I know next to nothing about UFC. I feel like it's a pretty safe take to say, like, he's the best UFC fighter ever. Is there somebody else off the top of your head that compares? I mean, he went from 205 to 250, and he won. That's ridiculous.
The only, like, case against him is, like, multiple failed PED tests.
Legitimately, yes.
That's, like, the only case. It's, like, the Barry Bonds.
Were they PEDs always, or was it, like, cocaine and PEDs? Was it more cocaine
than PEDs?
Little
column A, little column B, little line one, little line two.
That's funny, Sean.
Yeah, he's the Barry Bonds of MMA, I feel like. Where he's like,
so he's not going to get elected into the Hall of Fame. Are writers going to hold it against him?
He probably will, because I don't think the UFC. I'm not sure how the UFC Hall of Fame works. I seriously doubt it's more stuffy than the Baseball Hall of Fame. I imagine they're a little bit more lax on the character clause.
Well, yeah, because I'm assuming like who would be voting? It's probably Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
and
Dana White, and that's it.
Dana White's the commissioner, right? He can't vote on it, right?
Who cares? What? Who's
no Dana White? That would be biased. And
they don't care.
I feel like Dana White has a confrontational relationship with every single fighter in UFC too,
and every single media member who covers the UFC.
Yeah, there's like Ari something.
Ariel Helwani,
yeah. Yes. So I guess it would be just him and Joe Rogan. So like, hey, you pass these two people, boom, you're in.
Ariel Helwani isn't allowed at UFC events.
He isn't allowed?
Yeah. That's how confrontational Dana White is.
Dana Brown is from Massachusetts. That really is all you need to know. Excuse me, Dana White. Speaking of Dana Brown.
What a pro.
Dana Brown.
You did not get his name wrong. You're just a seamless transition.
It was, Sean. Speaking of Dana Brown, Dana Brown is, again, promising things that he has yet to deliver on. He's got to stop this. I'll tell you what it was next.
You are listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you. You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 for the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Some comments in the last segment where we did discuss John Jones at 713-780-3776. I did ask, how long does it generally take you to recover from an injury to the old scrotum? A texter, Eric the Driver, says, as someone who has taken crotch shots of varying degrees of intensity, it really depends. I wonder if he's a father. I feel like you're most likely to get crotch shots if you got a kid. Like, I feel like that's just par for the course, especially if you have a boy. Not that I would know. I feel like I've only heard about, like, dads having crotch injuries because their kids are like, ah ha ha!
The little kids have no respect for the...
None. They don't understand.
What fighting dirty means.
they seriously don't. I've had ones where it's just a tap, but it hits the perfect way to be the most painful. Yeah, you're right. Sometimes it's just a tap. And I've had massive hits that land higher up, so it didn't hurt as much. But I think 3 to 4 minutes sounds like a good average. Yeah, I think it's about 3 to 4 minutes. I had a really bad one in high school. I was trying to tackle somebody, and they kneed and stepped on the area. And I, you know, who wears a cup playing sports? Maybe baseball, but like football, it constricts your movement. But everything looked weird. Everything was a different color for basically a month. It was pretty painful. I remember just being like, oh my God. And like, and then after practice, like looking inside my pants. I'm like, oh, okay, that is just a little blood. This is not good. Some other comments here. John Jones is elected in the Hall of Fame already, says Chris and Humble. I looked up a report. This is from the Action Network. Hours after being inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame for a fight with Alexander Gustafsson in 2012, Jones was arrested in Vegas and facing charges of domestic violence and injuring and tampering with a vehicle. And then it just shows his rap sheet. He was arrested in New Mexico for an aggravated DWI and a negligent use of a firearm in March of 2020. 2012, he was arrested after crashing his Bentley into a utility pole in suburban New York. 2015, he was involved in a hit-and-run accident in Albuquerque, where he drove through a red light and crashed into two different vehicles. Seems like he actually might be more of a menace as a driver than he is as a fighter. So, there is that. And another texter wrote in, the substance John Jones was suspended for is actually no longer on their banned list. So that may help his argument. Huh. All right.
There we go.
Just got to stay off the roads. And maybe wear a cup. Although, maybe he needed to be kicked in the nads to unlock his true power.
Woke him up.
Yeah. So, wait, hang on. Let me say this name right. I got to read it. Pandorena Brown is back to pandering. Does that work? Working title, Sean? What do you say? No, yes, no, yes.
What about just like Pandana Brown?
Yeah, it doesn't work because he's not a panda.
Hmm.
It has to be Pandorena Brown. I think Dana Brown panders a lot when there's a microphone in front of him. He was on the Astros flagship over the weekend, and he continues to speak up about negotiations that the Astros are having with guys that they want to sign to extensions. He said negotiations with Kyle Tucker would most likely be tabled in the regular season if nothing gets done in spring training. Kyle Tucker, by the way, off to a really good start. More on that in a moment. He also said this: we're still in communication with Kyle Tucker's agent, Casey Close. We're optimistic. We think something can get done. We've also started talking to Framber Valdez and his agent. I don't like that he's talking about talking with the players, because I think it puts pressure on the players to agree to a more team-friendly deal. You only do something like this, put it out in the open, if you are trying to perhaps create pressure. And that's possible. It happens. I see no reason to say, hey, we're talking about the extensions. The extension either happens or it doesn't. I appreciate Dana Brown regularly making himself available to speak, but it feels like every single time he's speaking to us, he's pandering. Get the deal done? I'll believe you. The Christian Javier deal was awesome. But this is a couple of times now that we've heard him talk about Kyle Tucker's contract and Framber Valdez's contract. There's no extension. I think you should shut up. Like, don't tell me you're working on something. I don't care. Everyone's working on something. Everyone's working on being their best selves. Doesn't mean they're being their best selves every single day. Get the deal done. Otherwise, don't talk about this, okay? Otherwise, this is just straight pandering. And everyone seems to be believing everything that Dana Brown says. I'm pausing, being a little skeptical here. It's not to say that I think Dana Brown is a liar. I'm just saying, you're saying all the things people want to hear. People want Jose Altuve to get an extension. By the way, no extension yet. People want Alex Bregman to get an extension. By the way, no extension yet. He's already weighed on those two. He's weighing in on Framber Valdez and Kyle Tucker. Do any of them, and I'll listen. Signing Christian Javier ahead of time, that deal was the easiest one to get done of all five of these contracts. Because this is a guy who still has not technically proven himself as a regular season starter. These four, meanwhile, are, in the case of Altuve and Bregman, longtime Astro fan favorites who could make a ton of money on the open market. And in the case of Framber Valdez and Kyle Tucker, same thing, where they have pelts on the wall that Christian Javier does not to this point. So, how about do any of these things before talking about them as much as you're talking about them, Dana?
Pandaner Brown?
Pandaner Brown. That works.
I was also thinking Dana Brown Noser.
Ooh, that's better.
Okay.
That's better. But it's not like he's kissing the ass of the fans. It's.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not quite kissing their ass. If he was talking about James Click and he would, or excuse me, not James Click. If he was talking about Jim Crane.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, oh man, it's the best boss in America. Like, okay. Yeah, that's. That's different.
That all I've been doing this segment is looking at synonyms for pander, see if I can fit it into Dana Brown easier. It's very hard.
I want to make it clear with Dana Brown. I don't think he's doing a bad job or anything like that. I just don't like it when a general manager is this vocal about things when nothing's been done. It feels like you're just trying to make it seem like the organization is doing everything it can to bring somebody back. And teams do this all the time. It's hilarious to me when a team acts like it was a part of the bidding war in baseball free agency for a player that they had no chance at getting. Like, and you'll see that too. Like, the Detroit Tigers were really, really, really interested in acquiring insert great player. No, they weren't. They're just trying to throw their names in there so that fans don't think that they suck. Orioles, same thing. Like, teams do this a lot. The Astros don't want to be involved in those conversations. Hey, you're one of these teams that says you're going to do something and doesn't actually get it done.
Yeah, the leak afterwards of, you know, what they offered in a trade, but they didn't want to give up, you know, star prospect X. And
right.
So that's why they didn't get... Yeah, the star free agent or the star trade option.
Well, negotiating was too hard with Scott Boras. Like, they'll throw that stuff out there,
they
too.
They said Drew Gilbert's untouchable.
By the way, Kyle Tucker's playing really well this spring. He's 8-for-17 in spring training. This is what Dusty Baker had to say about him before he goes to the World Baseball Classic along with 10 other Houston Astros.
Oh, he's way ahead of where he is normally, I think. And he's actually ahead of, you know, most of the WBC guys, which is pleasant to see. That's why we played him 9 today. And so we wish him well. And, you know, like I said, just go away healthy and come back healthy.
He is a slow starter, so it's nice to see him start off like this. In the World Baseball Classic, much more authentic baseball reps than most of what you're getting in spring training. So he, Hector Neris, Brian Abreu, Ryan Presley, who else? Kyle Tucker, Ryan Presley, Jose Urquidy. I had a list of all the players in front of me, and now I can't read the list. Martin Maldonado, Jeremy Pena, Navier, Christian Javier, Ryan Abreu, Rafael Montero, Jose Altuve, and Luis Garcia, along with Kyle Tucker, all are going to be playing in the World Baseball Classic. So that's fun! Maybe I will watch the World Baseball Classic.
That doesn't sound like you will.
What do I do watching the World Baseball Classic? Do I root for the United States?
I'll leave that up to you, Paul. What, who you root for is between you and God.
Damn. That's deep.
Do you,
I guess I'm supposed to root for the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Do you want to support America or support other nations?
I want to support the Astros.
Are you going to root for Cuba? Oh, that's also, you can, I feel like that's acceptable. To
yeah.
Just, whenever you see Luis Garcia or Jose Urquidy pitching, you're like, I'm rooting for a scoreless inning here.
I do think it means more for the non-American players or the players that are playing on not the United States, because what, the assumption is probably that the U.S. or the Dominican Republic will win, right?
Yeah, it's probably those two in Japan. I think
yeah, Japan. I would assume. Yeah, maybe Korea's in there. I honestly don't know.
Yeah,
it's always funny that there's like an Italy team. Like, wait, what? Italy plays baseball,
and it's just Italian Americans.
Yeah,
it's like half just like Anthony Rizzo is on the team.
Yeah, I lived in the Bronx for a year.
Yeah.
Oh, gabagool.
I kind of. I don't know.
I'm rooting for Venezuela. I'm rooting for Jose Altuve. I feel like it means more for Jose Altuve and Venezuela than it means for anybody else.
You want him to be the Messi of the World Baseball Classic, where he's a goat who finally lifts his country
the door
up.
Down. Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know.
Okay.
I'll be rooting for America, Paul. USA. USA.
I know, and I suppose I would be rooting for communism if I'm rooting for Venezuela and a failed economy.
That's
all sorts of bad stuff. But Jose Altuve.
Par for the course.
He's going to fix it all. Should Jose Altuve be the king of Venezuela? Yes. That's the answer. Great segment, Paul. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in and to text in as well. In garbage time. Carmelo Anthony claims that the NBA is basically the Fed. What? Also, a baseball player is bitching and moaning about the pitch clock. So I'm going to bitch and moan about him. Paul Gallant Show.
ESPN 97.5. Locked in with the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Take the day off of work. Play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational. It's presented by SiteJab.com. It benefits kids' meals. This year's tournament is going to take place Wednesday, March 8th, 10:30. At Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer will receive beverages from Carback Brewing Company, lunch from Mendocino Farms, dinner, 18 holes of golf, and a limited edition ESPN t-shirt. You can register now at ESPN975.com. A texter contributing to our conversation about getting hit in the buddies. My daughter kicked me in the balls 2 days after I had a vasectomy. Worst pain in my life. From the 936. That is a crime. That is a crime. Really. Truly. Just horrible, horrible childsmanship. You got to know when it's not the right time to do it. I don't even know if you can walk when you have that, right? Like, don't you have to sit down for an entire weekend?
I think that might be what guys who get vasectomies say, just to get a weekend of sitting on a frozen bag of peas.
Right, like, and you want to schedule it around Masters weekend or something.
Yeah, or coming up, actually, with the March Madness.
Ooh, yeah, March Madness is a good time.
Get those vasectomies, fellas.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway.
This is not sponsored.
This segment has been sponsored by Get a Vasectomy by vasectomydoc.com. I'm just kidding. I made that up. We do have an updated top 25 in college basketball. The Cougs got 58 possible first place votes. UCLA got 3. They're number 2. Bleep off. It's West Coast bias. People talk about the East Coast bias all the time. There's a West Coast bias. There's an LA bias. Sadly, there's always a bias against the third coast. The good coast, in my opinion. Oh, you have petroleum in the water. Shut up! It's warm. Warmest water there is. Pacific, too cold. Atlantic, still too cold. I like the Gulf. I like to be in a bathtub when I go in the ocean. Okay? Other things that we learned in the top 25. Texas moves from 9 to 7. Baylor fell from 7 to 10. TCU remained at 22. And Texas A&M, with their win over Alabama, they jump up to 18. Before we dive into garbage time, Max Scherzer of the New York Mets had this to say about baseball's pitch clock.
And seeing how the umpire called it, I mean, it was on 0-0 for one count. I think that's one thing I also want to make sure we get cleaned up on the rules is, like, you know, if you look at a basketball clock when it goes 0-0, like, there's still another second on 0-0. So I want to make sure it's not 0-0, like, the moment it hit 0-0, or is there a little time on 0-0? Probably need to get a little clarification on that as we move forward.
Max, what are you talking about? The correct analogy would have been the delay of game penalty in the NFL, where when it gets 0-0, there's generally a split second that a team is allowed to snap the football because the referee has to see 0-0, then has to see the ball. If the ball starts snapping, by the time he looks down, then they don't call delay a game. This is the kind of wiggle room that led to baseball not enforcing the rule that in 2015 they set to make batters stay in the batter's box. And I know there is resistance to this rule, but someone like Max Scherzer asking for just a little bit of extra time is a slippery slope because it will turn into not enforcing the rule. I know there are some out there who are going to want the players to do this. I say, if you're an umpire, turn it into the ump show. Let's have some fun. Let's call balls on pitchers that will likely throw a temper tantrum. Let's call strikes on batters who will probably do the same thing. It'll add to the game. Oh, Paul, it's actually about the action. Yes, but if there is no action, at least there will be a temper tantrum. I like it. I want to see an umpire get into a shouting match with the player. If you're not going to get rid of umpires for robots, you may as well have them be entertaining, right? Human element, dumbass element, whatever you want to call it. I like that nuance that remains in baseball. Okay, guys, it's time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
Ah, I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Syracuse legend and Houston Rockets legend and Team USA legend, Carmelo Anthony, had an interesting take on the National Basketball Association.
I know who you with. I know where you live at. I know where they live at. I know when you close your eyes, I know when you wake up. Bam. So I'm like, you know, and I know what they doing. He's telling me, I know what they doing. Mm-hmm. Either tell them to stop or you got to cut them off. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, like how the f***? Like, that's when I knew NBA was f***ing fast. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's
when
I knew.
They got him in there. And the little one, 4 or 5.
He told me, he was just like, man, he said, I got to make an example out of you. I got to make an example out of you.
Damn.
That's a fact.
He said, I know everything.
They do be knowing everything.
I know your whole crew. I know who's doing what.
You got the best investigators ever.
You know what I'm saying? Right.
Why do the hype men on these podcasts like just repeat the same thing that the player is saying? Like, why don't they offer anything else? How much do they get paid for this? Yeah, oh yeah, damn. Should I do an interview podcast where I just go like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, facts. Just make noises.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that. Facts. But anyway, what is this in reference to by Carmelo Anthony? Like, what story is he talking about? Honestly, the NBA is clearly not doing a very good... Well, actually, they're impersonating the FBI quite well, because the FBI are notoriously a bunch of dumbasses. They haven't done anything about John Morant. John Morant's freaking playing with a gun. Like, it's virtual reality at a club while drinking.
I think he's referring to him having a sit-down with former NBA Commissioner David Stern. That's a very David Stern... that's the way a lot of conversations between David Stearns and players went, where he was like, listen.
Honestly, I miss David Stern. Can we reanimate him and have him replace Adam Silver so that these players stop being the biggest divas possible?
Damn.
What a take. Thank you. I like that. Just use that whenever I say something great. Random hype man on the Carmelo Anthony podcast. Chris Rock did a live Netflix special this week, and he finally weighed in on Will Smith's slapping of his face.
And his wife was her son's friend, okay? Now, I normally would not talk about this, but for some reason, these put that shit on the internet. I have no idea why two talented people would do something that low down. What the fuck? We all been cheated on. Everybody in here have been cheated on. None of us have ever been interviewed by the person that cheated on us on television.
That's a fair point. Should I watch the whole thing? I saw mixed reviews for it. I think a lot of people thought it was funny at points. I think others thought that, like a lot of stand-up comedy these days done by the GOATs, that it's more commentary than it is making you laugh hysterically. I'll admit, like, even the last time I went to go see a stand-up act, it was Tim Dillon when I was in Seattle. And I love Tim Dillon. But it did feel more like Tim Dillon was just speaking about the state of the world as opposed to what he does on his podcast, which I think is hilarious. I think he's better on the podcast than on stand-up. Hot take?
I think that's true for most stand-ups who also podcast. I feel like podcasting kind of ruins stand-up comedy because it's like, no, they're just better at that and it's easier for them to do.
Right.
And so they put less into the stand-up, I feel like.
That is Sean Mapes behind the glass.
Oh, wow. That was the last take of the show? Wow.
It was. I'm Paul Gallant. Well, look, we're trying to hit the clock. We're trying to be better about it. Killer Bees are up next. Thanks to our texters, our Twitchers, our callers, and our tweeters. I am merely Paul Gallant. That was Sean Apes behind the glass. So long, farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Monday. Peace.
Damn.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.